Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live a good life and to create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social, conscious, and unconscious dynamics and desires. Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Edgy Ideas. We're delighted to be back after my summer break. And our special guest today is Joan Lurie. Joan is founder of Organomics. And this session is going to think about organizational ecology. And I'm excited to talk to Joan. Joan's had a master's in education, adult education and development. And she's worked for over 30 years in this area of trying to shift and adapt organizations to a more systemic way of thinking. Joan, you're very welcome to Edgy Ideas. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me here, Simon.
Good. So you talk about organizational ecology. Do you want to tell our listeners what you mean when you say organizational ecology? Let's start there.
Okay, great. I think one of the things that I've noticed after the last 30 years of doing the work is that there are two dominant paradigms in the field of leadership and OD or in management theory. And the two, I would say, are kind of the more technical paradigm where if leaders, managers, practitioners want to bring about change, they see the organization through that lens and they try and change organizational structures, processes, even sort of management systems like performance and reward. Or they see the organization as a collection of people. And if we, the assumption there is if we want to bring about change, then we need to change people. We need to understand what makes people up and how they tick and how they interrelate person to person. So we're very focused on the psychological and the interpersonal. And I think both of those lenses obviously have a place in terms of addressing how we help systems, organizations thrive. But I think the lens that we haven't brought sufficiently to organizations, and we've had a go at it in different ways as a field, is to see organizations as systems. And, you know, if I look at that through that lens, I think that there are different models. So I see a lot of contestation in the field about what we mean by a system, what methodology should we use. And so how I came to ecology is to kind of sidestep the whole technical debate about what is a system and the kind of stuckness that we're in about what do we mean by the systemic methodology. And I thought if we rather just think about organizations as ecologies, that's something that would be easier for people to relate to, because we understand how ecological systems work in nature. And so why couldn't we sort of help people bring a similar logic and a similar way of understanding organizations? Because actually they function in very similar ways. There are many similar principles. And in fact, instead of seeing organizations as collections of people, we can think about organizations as a complex set of interactions. And that behavior is not as a result of individuals and people interpersonally interacting alone. It's actually about this complex ecology of roles and how the roles interrelate and connect. And so starting to see organizations through that lens, I think is a very helpful one, because we start to see things we didn't see before because we were looking through these other two dominant lenses.
Yeah, that's very helpful, Joan. And, you know, I use the term ecosystems, you use the term ecology, and I think they're kind of entangled and meshed, those terms. But we're trying to get to the same gig, really, which is really trying to shift people's thinking. And what I'm struck with when in my work is people kind of get this logical or conceptual idea that, and they have done for quite a long time. And like you say, they use complex systems, that they use different languages for addressing this. But then there's this massive slippage when you actually start to do the work. They go back to psychology, what I call a therapist discourse, or they go back to the mechanistic, the controller discourse. And it's like we're hardwired, or since modernity, I think we've been kind of hardwired into this other way of thinking. And even those who conceptually get this stuff slip back into kind of this psychological or mechanistic way of thinking when they actually do the work. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. I completely agree with that, Sam. And I think, you know, one of the challenges we face, and, you know, if we think about how is it that systems thinking and complexity has been around in other domains, in other fields, and has taken hold for many years, and yet in the field of organizations and leadership, it has not taken hold. We're sort of one of the last fields to bring this lens. And I think it's because we can't fully move out of that sort of slippage back into the psychological. It is so hardwired. But I think one of the challenges is that we can't do that because it's sort of like a snake eating its tail, because we haven't been able to develop alternative methodologies practically for what would we be doing differently if we brought this more systemic complexity lens into organizations. So what we do is we get it in theory, as you're saying, but then we use all our old methods and old maps, which are more fit for psychological or mechanistic. And so we actually just keep stuck exactly where we are. And, you know, we kind of maintain the status quo. It's like a hegemonic position, right? Psychology and mechanism have got such a stranglehold on us as a field that we haven't been able to actually dislodge from our own logic. And we haven't been able to sort of rapidly enough develop methodology that actually sidesteps psychology. So whilst we wrap it, like you say, you know, in this kind of systemic complexity bow, we actually continue to do exactly the same work.
That's my experience. And I mean, gains are made. We are kind of shifting. People are kind of opening up to thinking about patterns and connections and interdependencies. But still, I'm just writing an article at the moment before we got on this podcast, and I'm making the case that the modernity mindset is one about division and control. It was all about categorizing. It's about reductionism. It's about breaking things down to smaller parts. It's kind of that's kind of the way people kind of are geared to think. And in the workplace, it's about kind of short-term targets. It's about hitting the quarterly numbers. It's about hitting kind of your performance reviews. And this measurement, this control, is really kind of endemic. And breaking that kind of mindset I talk about creating eco-mindsets. And that seems to be the fundamental challenge for the human race, I think, not just in organizations, you know, for politics, for leaders everywhere.
Yeah. I think Fritjof Capra says it beautifully when he says, you know, all of our world's problems kind of stem from this one thing, right, is our kind of mechanistic logic, because we are unable to see pattern and we don't think in pattern and we don't see network. And if we could just, you know, reframe and bring more this mindset and be able to help people to see pattern, then, you know, we would solve a lot of our problems, because we wouldn't see ourselves any longer as separate from the pattern, but actually in pattern. And, you know, we're not separate from the system, but we are in the system. And I see this so deeply embedded in organizations, as you must as well, Simon, when I'm working with leaders, helping them bring a systems lens to what's going on, and I invite them sort of onto the balcony, let's observe how the system's working. Two dominant things that I hear are people describe the behaviors in a collective sense, right? So what we're absolutely wired for, and it's completely implicit, is for people to describe, you know, people are not being respectful, they don't trust each other, so all the description of a system is in interpersonal language and in description which doesn't make distinction, or in description which kind of collapses the whole system into porridge, like we do this, we do that. And one of the biggest sort of steps that I'm working with leaders is to try and help them make distinction. And so that they're not sort of globulizing everything into the same behavioral brush. And so I think what we've really got to think about is, what are the two or three systemic nudges or reframes that we can help leaders make that invite them into a more systemic description? Mm-hmm. And one of them is to help them make distinction. And so when they describe things like, you know, when I say, well, describe how the system's working, well, we don't respect each other, we don't collaborate. First of all, you know, I help them say, well, if you were collaborating, what would that look like between entities? Can you tell me what this entity would do relative to this entity and how the rules of engagement or the interaction between would be? So just those little moves and nudges help people out of the sort of globalized description of behavior and begin to describe circularity and distinction and interaction.
Yeah,
that's one of the small moves I think we could help, small but big shifts that we can help leaders make. I think the other one is that the other kind of common pattern I see is that when I invite leaders into description about the system, the one thing they always leave out is themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's another implicit thing. I think leaders and people generally see system as something that is not of them. There's me and then there's the system.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And just that other move where we say, well, actually, you're not of the system. You know, no matter where you put yourself, you are of the system. So instead of you thinking your role is to diagnose what's going on out there, you need to be in balcony position, almost kind of in a quantum position to self, and put yourself in the system and in the diagnosis. But we're not used to being observer to self, right? We're used to being separate from. So that's another sort of important shift, I think. If we could help leaders into understanding description includes self in role in system, right?
Yeah, that's very helpful. I use the phrase, there is no outside. It's like, you know, right. We talk about nature as if, you know, well, how can we use nature's resources? Or how can we kind of change nature? As if it's kind of something outside of ourselves. And like, we are nature, get used to it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like we are the organization. Exactly. It's not that we are up here in leadership and management roles, and then there's the organization that we have to change.
You know? Yeah. I even see slippage in our own conversations. You're talking about being on a balcony, which again, it sets you kind of above. And psychology is a huge part of this. It's like people's psyches are wired and have been socially constructed and being kind of manifested in the modern era in this way, because in the pre-modern era, I do a lot of reflection on the pre-modern era when we lived in an enchanted world, and it's very unscientific and it's all about magic and it's all about the gods having powers and nature having powers. And yet there was a wisdom in that. There's an irrationality, but there's also a wisdom in that enchantedness, and you know, the Aboriginal kind of indigenous peoples kind of hold that wisdom. They understand the connectedness. They understand that there is this interdependency, you know, and that's kind of that wisdom was completely lost from the pre-modern world. And that's kind of somehow we need to regain that, I think.
Yeah, I'm so absolutely aligned with you. And I think when we talk about, you know, the rewiring, we have to rewire ourselves. It's not actually that somewhere inherently in our DNA there isn't this way of making sense. There is this epistemology. There is this way of knowing. We've lost it. Yeah. We have to tap into where it is in the system, both inside ourselves, but also it is still alive in parts, in other cultures. It's just we've lost it in the Western mechanistic thinking. And it's not about, you know, starting something new. It's really, I think, what you're beautifully describing is tapping into something that is somewhere deep in our DNA,
yeah.
But we've sort of obfuscated it and it's become invisible to us, you know, that way of knowing. And we have to revitalize it, reinvigorate it, you know. I think absolutely agree with you. And where are those places where we can find it?
Yeah. I mean, my experience of doing this work is that you can do it conceptually, and I do that. I teach my leadership frames. I talk about eco-leadership. You talk about ecology, and people talk about systems. They read Capri, they read Senge, they read complex adaptive systems. They do that kind of theoretical conceptual piece, and that's helpful. You need that. You need some concepts to hold on to. But for me, the deeper work is when you do things. I mean, you saw my recent LinkedIn kind of post on making chutney, you know, and the process of like growing the beans, of being in nature, of being in the garden, of using your hands. For me, there's something experiential around this learning. And a lot of the work I do with organizations is try and give people an experiential engagement, because that kind of sticks, and that reignites that recovered lost memory in a way that concepts and theory doesn't. So that's some of my experience. You have to reconnect with nature, with systems, and actually kind of like group relations conferences can do it in a way as well. They can see, you can see how this kind of system kind of gets hold of you and takes hold of you. So you're not kind of this unique individual person. You're actually part of a complex kind of a adaptive system, and you actually experience that in your soul and in your body.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think what my kind of idea is that we are not going to help people grow a systemic or complexity kind of epistemology in classrooms. I completely agree with you, right? We're not going to discover it there. We can't train it. What we need to do is to rediscover it in practice, right? Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, one of the places that we can rediscover it in practice is in the organization, which is why I think one of my reasons for kind of stepping into seeing organizations as ecologies, because if you can think about an organization as an ecology, then that is the place where you can revive sensing into the ecology that you're a part of. And so instead of having to do it in a classroom or in another context, we actually use the context of an organization, which, if we really think about it, is a place where they have to find a way to be in interaction with one another, like any ecology, in a way which releases energy. And instead of going into other ecologies or other contexts to learn it, we use the context of organization. And how I think, what my experience in doing this over the last 30 years is, you don't match leaders and kind of take them into and join them in the mechanism or in the interpersonal, but you take them beyond the human into the ecological, which is really to say, we will apply these principles in your real problems. Yeah. And your business challenges, because then you meet them where they are. If you can make it meaningful to them and show them how this way of thinking actually changes the outcomes that they get in their role, the buy-in is exponential, right? Yeah. So instead of trying to teach it in another context, it's to say, you need to sort of learn to see yourself as an ecology, as an organization, I mean self. You need to see self on balcony and in system simultaneously, because you have to be in both perspectives. You're not on the balcony looking at the system with you outside of it. You're on the dance floor looking at self, which is, you know, and that the context we're doing it in is in the organization and your business challenges. Yeah. Then we have a chance, because then it makes sense to them in ways that is deeply meaningful to them in their role.
Sure, sure. I mean, some of the work I had trouble with in this area, you get into biomimicry, and you get into there can be an idealization as well around, you know, there can be a kind of a fetishization of kind of indigenous peoples. There can be an idealization of kind of people go into kind of a new agey spiritual kind of a space sometimes in the integral work. And it kind of troubles me because it's... It creates a division. It kind of creates a kind of an elite. We are the ones who know, and you're the ones who don't. And some of the work I did early on was in a Tavistock clinic when I was the master's in their organizational program. And I shifted the lens. People went into organizations and did organizational observation. And it was very interesting, because all the observations they did, they'd sit in an organization in a certain place and they'd observe the organization. And it's taken from infant observation techniques. Very, very powerful. Use your transference, use kind of what is evoked in your body, evoked in yourself to make sense of the situation. It's a very powerful exercise. And yet every report came back was about people. That's all I saw, was people in an organization. And I've been studying actor network theory with John Laws and Bruno Latour, and kind of making sense of actually kind of there's other things in organizations. There's technology, there's material things, there's buildings, there's architecture, there's the environment, there's kind of there's all these things, and there's people. And it's this combination which makes up the ecology or makes up the ecosystem. You know, I talk about technology, society, and nature coming together to make up an ecosystem or ecology. And when I got the students to go and observe that with that lens, we got a very different story.
It's
very interesting. You realize the power of the water cooler, you realize kind of the power of kind of the architecture and what it does to people, and just very, very interesting. And that's part of the shift I think we need to do, is about getting technology. Don't separate kind of the digital and technology kind of people. They're part of this ecology.
Yeah, I think what is absolutely missed, and I think where I see, you know, that work slip into the psychological and the human and the people description, is what gets missed in organizations is that there are roles and subsystems and entities in interaction. Mm-hmm. And when I help leaders look at the system, what I'm helping them look at is the patterns of interaction, role to role, and subsystem to subsystem, and how different subsystems come together as an ecology. So you're looking not only at people, you're not looking only at the environment, you're not looking only at the kind of technical mechanisms like organization charts and technology and things. You're also looking at the entities where people are drawing boundaries, how interaction is happening. So you're looking at the interaction between those subsystems, where they formed, where the boundaries are, where the incoherence is in how people in their minds are drawing the boundaries and forming those subsystems, but also that organizations are a complex network of roles. This is what makes them distinctive. This is the piece that I think is where the gold lies. And I think it's the piece that is unlocks the liberation really in the organization, is that we can help people see that the interaction is between two people, but the interaction actually is always between two people who are in roles, because you're never in an organizational, you're never in a system outside of role, actually, but you're never in an organization system outside of the role, because you enter that system contracted into a role. And everybody in that system is occupying a role on behalf of the whole. And where I think people, the sort of invisible piece to us, but where a lot of the noise and conflict resides, is in how people perceive their role and how they see their role connect and relate to other roles. So it's like a sort of, it's the different sort of layering and lens that I think is the unknown, and it's the piece that gets missed. Because if you start to look at not relationship person to person, but relatedness role to role, you discover a whole lot of insight and data, which is actually right there, but we haven't seen an organization as a complex network of roles. And when I'm helping leaders see organization, I'm inviting them into that way of seeing, that way of knowing, and that form of description. And that, in kind of Bateson terms, is that difference is the difference that makes the difference, because they discover that the problem isn't between them interpersonally. The incoherence is between how the roles are set up in a pattern of relatedness, not relationship.
Have you studied with Neoda and Tavistock around organizational role analysis and the Grubb Institute? Were you informed by that work? Does that inform your role analysis?
Yeah, Grubb, I have, and you know, I do work with Neoda. I'm talking at the conference next week. I think the distinction between Grubb Institute, Neoda, and the work that I do, which is based a lot on work that Irving Borwick did, and he worked closely at one time with the Grubb Institute, is that we work with role in a much more kind of mental construct and assumptive hypothesis construct rather than in an unconscious way. Okay. And that is not to say that it is better in, or that the other way of thinking about role through the unconscious role that people occupy or the unconscious dynamics in the group role to role. There's a place for that. But I think the work that I do, which is distinctive in my organizational role analysis work, is that we are looking much more at people's mental maps, their assumptions, their hypotheses, and their kind of mental construct of role. Okay. And we don't necessarily go into the unconscious or the psychological aspect.
Right.
And I think that's a very important distinction.
Yeah. I mean, another distinction I make from the Grubb work and the Tavistock work is they focus on BART, boundaries, authority, role, and task. And for me, that model came from the 1950s and was very helpful in the 1950s, because that's how organizations were structured, in hierarchies, with clear roles, with clear tasks, and it was like very helpful. In the network society, in the digital age, in kind of in this complex, fluid, adaptive space we're in now, I have trouble with it, because it doesn't pay enough attention to kind of these ecologies of networks. And networks is a very important word for me. I do network analysis in my coaching course, and it takes coaching beyond the individual, beyond the psychological. It says what's happening in the connections, the interdependencies, what's going on in these networks, because these networks are more fluid. And sure, you have a role, but you probably have multiple roles these days. And depending on kind of which part of the company you're in, or which customer you're facing, the perceptions of you will change and your role will change. So it's a much more, it's a bit like gender. You know, gender was, when I grew up, it was pretty clear. Yeah. It was like a male and female. Well, now it's not. It's much more fluid, and we have a different, the same with roles, I think. And it's about taking on this new network kind of dynamism and change in society, and applying this kind of role analysis to these kind of networks. That's one of the issues I'm working with at the moment.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with me more. And I think we've said this before. It's like I'm talking to my kind of mirror, because I think we're so aligned. Like, one of the places that how I came to this sort of idea of talking about organizational ecology is that idea that when I'm talking about role, I'm not talking about job. I am talking about roles you occupy in different contexts in the organization at different times. And that we have to let go of this idea that we get one job in an organization, and that, you know, we look at that in a very rigid way, because in the network sense, and in this much more fluid sense, we can take up 20 roles a day in organizations, from, you know, leader, peer, person giving feedback, you're in a role of feedback giver. So you actually, and you know, are in managing every day. You're not managing self, you're managing self in an ecology of roles.
Yeah.
And that construct is so helpful for complexity, because it breaks you out of this unitary idea that I'm always me, and I'm always me in the same way in every context. Role defines behavior. Yeah. And if you can think about how you need to take up your role in a context and be able to fluidly move through those, you will be able to be much more easeful through complexity, because you're no longer in one job. So I think it is critical to seeing organizations as ecologies, is to think about you in self managing an ecology of roles.
Yeah.
In multiple contexts, right?
That's right. And as in any ecology, a healthy ecology has to have a kind of a biodiversity. And it's about kind of being able to kind of engage in that biodiversity and not be threatened by kind of the other, or threatened by different positions, but start to understanding as complex networks, as kind of interdependent kind of networks. It's a different kind of a way of engaging in rather than kind of our office versus their office, our team versus their team. It's a different kind of engagement, isn't it? It's a different kind of entanglement.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things to help with this is that if we think about it, we take up multiple roles in other contexts all the time, and we do it very fluidly, even if we don't have awareness of it. You know, you step out of a marriage system where you're in role of partner, you step into role of parent, you step into role of child, and you do that maybe within half an hour, depending who you're interacting with, right? Yeah. So we have this in our DNA. So we do it quite fluidly in other contexts, but then we come into organizations and we sort of want to lock into being in one thing, right? But actually we are in these multiple roles. We just need to learn to understand that and how to navigate that with more ease. So if we can help people learn to step in and out of role and even ask themselves the question, what role am I in here in this context at this time? And how do others see my role? That's where we create coherence. That's where we unleash, you know, energy. It's in that role-to-role interaction.
I think that's very interesting. I've also been studying, I kind of read widely, and I engage in many different kind of philosophers and study, and I've been reading queer theory quite a lot. And find it very helpful because it's, again, it kind of busts through the boundary. Kind of it challenges your kind of modernist idea, division and category and clear boundaries. And it kind of puts us in this fluid place. And I think that's what you're talking about and what I'm experiencing in organizations. We have to kind of take on that fluidity. We have to understand that we are a part of nature one moment, we are a parent another moment, we're a boss at another moment, we're a follower. I always say, like, leadership and followership, they're not fixed positions, they're just fluid positions. Right. You know, doesn't matter if she was executive or you're, you know, the first person in the office, you still take up leadership when a crisis happens or something happens. This is a fluid position, and I find queer theory quite helpful to kind of us through that. So, I mean, language is important. Language is really important, I think, as part of this process, and using ecology, using ecosystems, using fluidity, using networks, and bringing that into the conversations does kind of help that shift from the kind of the individual psychological kind of perspectives.
Totally. And this is why one of the things I've been completely captured with is, how do we help break out of the paradigm? You know, what are the things that we need to do to disrupt ourselves as a field where we can really bring this kind of complexity and systemic lens and break out of the psychological? I think if we keep getting people who see themselves in role of psychologist trying to take up that role in the kind of context of a system, then we're going to keep defaulting. You know, so it was like, well, Joan, use your own theory of role to actually help disrupt the field. So let's think about creating a role which is organizational ecologist, not organizational psychologist. There's a place for the organizational psychologist. What if we actually invented a role that invited people into diagnosing the interactions, diagnosing the pattern, not diagnosing people? And I think if we could actually start to use language and role and relatedness, you know, give the system more of itself and what it needs, then actually we would have a chance of disrupting the field. But if we keep, and, you know, I came to this, I was teaching a team of CHRO and her team once about complexity and systems and helping them look at themselves as a complex system. And it was so liberating for them. But at the end, the feedback I got from the 30 so people in the room was, no, not a single training that we did, and they were all, you know, they'd all done diplomas in HR and OD, and some of them had studied psych, not a single one had introduced them to this other lens.
No.
So everything was about being locked into that paradigm. So it's almost like the only way we're going to kind of disrupt the field is to create an adjacent one.
Yeah.
And not to make this psychological one bad or wrong. It's just that it is all consuming. We need, you know, this idea of what's the adjacency. We have to start to design that adjacency. That's how we're going to unlock from these two mechanistic and psychological paradigms and embrace this kind of third lens, right, as an adjacent lens, not to make the others bad or wrong, because we'll create resistance, but through inventing and creating new roles, you know, roles that, you know, if we look at any field like tech, there are new roles there that were never there before. And how tech has reinvented itself as part of that is, you know, they're data scientists now, and all of those new roles have emerged from that context. We need to do the same. And it sounds really clunky and weird. Oh, what's an organizational ecologist, Joan? Don't call me that here. The CEO will freak out, you know. But actually, it's in the new language and in the new role definitions, I think, that we will be able to design our way forward into this adjacency.
I mean, I'm just setting up and we'll be launching, kind of doing a soft launch of the Eco Leadership Institute this this month, and we'll be launching it fully in the new year. But it's eco-leadership for me is exactly that. It's saying, like, you're not a leader, you're an eco-leader. Like, this prefix is, like, vitally important, because we don't want the kind of leaders, because that stimulates charisma, hierarchy. It kind of
it's a mass, inspire people.
Yeah, master signifier, which kind of has this psychological messianic kind of way of doing stuff, or controlling people, or, you know, eco-leadership means about taking on the organizational ecology, thinking about the ecosystem, thinking about the patterns, thinking about the interaction, thinking about the interdependencies, thinking about all the networks, you know, and it has to kind of come together. And that's the work I'm doing, and that's the work you're doing. And no doubt we'll do some work together in the future on it.
I hope so. It's like these rivulets and streams that are sort of coming together, right? And they'll be much more powerful if they can kind of join in a bigger stream, I think.
And often in our field, like, you know, we have these disparate kind of people from different areas doing overlapping work. And we talk a lot about systems and stuff, but we're not the greatest collaborators in our field. And I'm hoping that the Ecoleadership Institute will kind of be a basis for collaboration, because it is about kind of learning from each other, about sharing, about seeing yourself, about collaborating, about partnering. You know, we lecture kind of organizations on it, and yet we in our field, we often kind of... build walls between ourselves. So it's really about breaking down those walls. So I'm looking forward to partnering with you and many others, Joan. We're coming to an end, Joan. It's been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed sharing with you. Ooh. I ask guests at the end of the podcast if they have any thoughts or reflections on what it means to live a good life and to create a good society. So it's a big question. I'm just going to throw it at you. Any thoughts on what it means to live a good life and create a good society?
Well, that's a beautiful big question to land on. I think if I connect it to our conversation, to live a good life and to create a good society, I would say is to see self in relationship, self in relatedness, self in system, and not to see self as separate from, but rather in continuous interaction and in co-creation with. And that would be, I think, the essence that would define us being able to be a good life, that the whole is greater than me, and that if I can see myself as part of the whole, we'll be able to break people out of the sort of, and myself, out of the focus on self, and a focus more on just being with. I think everything kind of would ripple from there. So
that's a lovely thought, and it aligns with our conversation. So thank you very much again. It's been great talking to you, and I look forward to working with you in the future. Take care, Joan.
Thanks, Simon. Likewise.
Thank you for listening to Edgy Ideas. If you enjoyed our podcast and would like more information about our coaching, training, and events, please contact simon@analyticnetwork.com or go to www.analyticnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.